You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I'll be covering the case of Rhonda Jahari. February 10th, 2009, Rhonda, then 42, was talking with her sister on the phone as they usually did, catching up on their events from the day. At 11:30 p.m., Rhonda would tell her sister she was heading to bed. Rhonda hung up the phone, and that would be the last time anyone heard or saw from Rhonda ever again. What happened between the hours of 11:30 p.m., February 10th, and 8 a.m. the morning of the 11th? How did Rhonda just vanish in 8.5 hours? Let's dive in. Rhonda David Jahari was born June 2, 1966, in Lebanon to parents David and Anise. Rhonda was one in the set of fraternal twins. They were the third siblings born to a large family. In total, there were 7 girls and 1 boy. When Rhonda was little, her family left Lebanon, moving to the United States. They lived in Florida, Hawaii, and Ohio before eventually settling in Michigan. There isn't much information about Rhonda as a child, but her sister Nadia says that Rhonda was a beautiful jewel in the midst of her family. She was loving, kind, and had a very giving heart. Nadia also said that Rhonda was very religious and had a strong faith. Rhonda had a daughter, Madeline, that the family affectionately calls Maddie, that was 5 at the time of her disappearance. Maddie didn't live with her mother. It seems that there were some health and mental conditions that Rhonda was dealing with, and her mother would step in being the main caregiver for her daughter, Maddie. Rhonda was diagnosed with bipolar and depression, along with other medical conditions. This required her to take medication, including an injection, every 15 days for her bipolar treatment, which, before she disappeared, she had recently stopped taking and was looking into alternative treatments. However, family said Rhonda saw Maddie every day and doted on her. Maddie was her whole life. She was a loving mother who was very involved in her child's daily care. Rhonda also spoke daily to many of her family members. She was very close to her parents and siblings, and they also stayed in daily contact with her to help monitor her health and well-being. Rhonda was a very creative and artistic person. She was a former actress and had small parts in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, True Lies, and in the 1980 crime drama, Jake and the Fat Man. Rhonda was also a writer who wrote a book titled Letter from a Rose. Though struggling with bipolar disorder and depression and other health disabilities, Rhonda was able to maintain her own apartment and live on her own in Fenton, Michigan. The day before she disappeared, February 9th, 2009, in the morning, Rhonda was spotted wandering around McDonald's on Owen Road, asking passerbys for money. By 10 a.m., police officers had arrived at the McDonald's, and after speaking with Rhonda, they offered her a ride home, which Rhonda did accept. The following night, February 10th at 11:30 p.m., Rhonda would be speaking to her sister Fadia on her landline phone. After chatting and checking in on each other's day, Rhonda told Fadia that she was heading to bed and ended the call. The next morning, February 11th, Rhonda had a scheduled pickup at 8 a.m. from a ride service called Your Ride. They had arrived at her apartment as scheduled, but Rhonda didn't answer the door. Rhonda's mother, Anise, would be notified of this. Anise would take Maddie to school that morning and then head straight to Rhonda's apartment. When Anise arrived at Rhonda's apartment, she found her door wide open and no sign of Rhonda. As Anise began looking around the apartment, she notices that Rhonda's clothes that she had helped her pick out the night before were laying on her bed, and it looked as if her bed hadn't been slept in. In the kitchen, the coffee pot sat cold on the table next to Rhonda's favorite chair, and next to that was a pack of cigarettes. Rhonda was a chain smoker and would have never left without taking her cigarettes with her. As a former chain smoker who has quit now for about 6 years, I can tell you we don't leave without our cigarettes or our lighter. Anise knew that something was wrong, and that's when she decided to call the Fenton Police Department and report her daughter missing. Police arrived at Rhonda's apartment and noted that there were no signs of a struggle or forced entry. After looking through her belongings, it was determined that the only things missing from her apartment was a blue bathrobe and a brown jacket. Rhonda didn't have a driver's license or a cell phone, so she depended on others for rides, and all her calls were made from her landline in her apartment. That afternoon, Rhonda's family would hold a press conference at Freedom Center Church, pleading with the public for information on Rhonda's whereabouts. They would tell the public they believed she would be wearing a blue bathrobe and a brown jacket. Police began their search within a four-mile radius around Rhonda's apartment complex. A few days later, over 100 volunteers would join in the search efforts. Rescue dogs would be brought in, and those dogs would track Rhonda's scent all the way to the McDonald's on Owens Road, the same McDonald's that Rhonda was picked up by officers on February 9th. Investigators would question Rhonda's neighbors, starting with the ones on each side of Rhonda's apartment, to see if they had noticed anything unusual that night. But they hadn't seen or heard anything. They also questioned a neighbor who had gone fishing at Crane Lake that night of Rhonda's disappearance. He cooperated with investigators, and after the search of Crane Lake and the surrounding areas turned up no trace of Rhonda, they cleared him. The next step investigators took was to obtain Rhonda's phone records in hopes it would give them some clues as to what happened to her that night. However, all they discovered was what they already knew, that Rhonda was on the phone with her sister Fadia until around 11:30 that night. After that, Rhonda had no incoming or outgoing calls that night. Next, investigators look into the surveillance footage from the apartment complex parking lot. The camera was motion activated, and at 5 a.m. in the morning of Rhonda's disappearance, they captured a car pulling into the parking lot and leaving about a minute later. It would be too dark outside, still early in the wee hours of the morning, to make out the make and model of the car or the license plate. Investigators still don't know if that car had anything to do with Rhonda's disappearance. At first, Rhonda's family questioned how could Rhonda walk through the parking lot without being captured by the motion-activated camera. But when they took into account how slowly she moved due to health issues, they realized it was possible that she could move through the parking lot without triggering the camera. A month after Rhonda's disappearance, her family would have Rhonda's information put on a billboard on US 23. It would generate a few tips, but nothing that led them any closer to finding Rhonda. In April 2009, investigators would get a tip from a receptionist at a dental office that a man who had brought Rhonda in for many of her dentist appointments in Flint between October and November of 2008 would become agitated while waiting for Rhonda. He would constantly ask the receptionist how much longer Rhonda's appointments were going to take, and he was very impatient. So he was pretty memorable to this receptionist. The man was between 30 and 35 years old, clean-cut appearance, and wore a black leather jacket. Police did release a sketch with a public appeal seeking his identity, but unfortunately, no one came forward saying they recognized him. 3 years later, Fenton Crime Stoppers would become involved in Rhonda's case. They would hold a press conference at Fenton Police Department asking the public once again for any information about Rhonda's whereabouts and any information on this unknown man who had accompanied her to her dentist appointments. As to where the case is today, there have been no developments on Rhonda's case. Rhonda's father would pass away in 2015 without ever knowing what happened to his daughter. Her family says that she would never disappear without contacting her family, and she would never abandon her daughter, Maddie. Unfortunately, there's been very, very little coverage on this case, and there continues to be very little coverage. If you look up her name on YouTube, you can find videos that her sister made over 9 years ago now, with a photo slideshow of Rhonda and her family. I will post a lot of those photos to my website as well as include the links to the YouTube videos in my show notes and on my website as well. Rhonda's sister Nadia would reach out and write about her sister on the Project Jason's Voice for the Missing website, a nonprofit started by Kelly Jawowski, the mother of a missing son, who started this nonprofit for families to generate awareness for their missing loved ones. It's a great site where family members can write in and just express what they want the world to know about their loved ones. What it's been like searching for them, what life's been like since they vanished, and so much more. Nadia wrote a long open letter about her sister, and I will put the link in the show notes and on my website if you would like to read all of it. But I wanted to read to you the last few paragraphs because I think it's important as listeners, creators, and advocates that we remember why we do this and that there are real people behind these cases and stories. Nadia writes, "I know tragedy happens where people don't always have an opportunity to say goodbye with sudden deaths, but they have closure in knowing what happened to their loved ones. I consider people to be blessed in having an opportunity to say goodbye to their loved ones. I have a need within me to let Rhonda know how I feel. I have regrets in wanting Rhonda to know how sorry I am. I miss her voice. I miss her face. I miss hugging her. I miss our talks. I miss her phone calls, which I received almost every day from her. I miss everything about her. I feel as though there is a void within me that only Rhonda can fill. I feel as though I've contracted an incurable disease and Rhonda is the only cure to save me. Where I find strength to continue to search for Rhonda is in the fact that we haven't discovered the worst case scenario. She's still missing and anything is possible. I find strength in every time I'm doing something in her search, whether posting a poster, calling on the media, writing this letter, or anything else I can do helping in the search for my beautiful sister. I don't feel good in doing nothing. I have to answer to myself, to Maddie, to my mother, my family, and to Rhonda. To say one day that I have done everything in my power in trying to find Rhonda. I will never give up. No matter where I go, I'm always looking for my sister. Yes, the holidays are among us. What do you say about that? I have nothing to say to that. My sister is missing. To all those that have missing loved ones, I feel your pain. May we all find the answers to the question of what happened to those we've loved our whole life. May God give us strength in knowing the truth. Sincerely, Nadia Dahari." At the time of Rhonda's disappearance, she had no cell phone and no money. She was 42, 5'1", and 100 pounds. Rhonda is a female of Lebanese descent with brown hair and brown eyes, and it is believed that she was wearing a light-colored blue robe. She tends to walk at a very slow pace and is a heavy smoker. She has pierced ears and wears a dental bridge. If you have any information regarding Rhonda's case, you can submit an anonymous tip to the city's website at cityoffenton.org or calling 810-629-5311 or through Crime Stoppers' website 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org or crimestoppersofflint.com. Thank you for taking time to listen to another mini episode. Hopefully we can shine a light on Rhonda and generate some more awareness in her case. Don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to hit share, like, and retweet. The more we share a face, the closer we get to solving a case. Until next time.